And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Amid the holiday shuffle, you might have missed it, though in terms of historic scale, it's a little hard to recall anything quite this big happening this quickly. So quickly, in fact, it's not at all clear what comes next. A bit of backstory. Shortly before he died in the year 2000, Syria's longstanding dictator Hafez al-Assad handed the reins to his son, Bashar, who governed Syria as a totalitarian police state with allies including Iran and Russia's Vladimir Putin. But in recent days, a coalition of Syrian rebels arose with a lightning strike of military offensives against the Assad regime, culminating in something that was almost previously unthinkable, the sudden fall of the House of Assad. Now, what for Syria, an historic adversary of Israel? Jeremy Suri is the Mack Brown Distinguished Professor for Global Leadership, History, and Public Policy at the LBJ School, and he's also in the History Department, University of Texas at Austin. Professor Suri, welcome back.
Nice to be with you, David.
Good to be with you. Bashar al-Assad had faced uprisings before, each of them brutally quashed with overwhelming military force or extending into a long-running stalemate. Why was the outcome so decisive and so different here?
Well, we have to say that this outcome has surprised pretty much everyone, I'm sure Assad among those. And I think there are three factors that really led to this moment. First is the corruption and stagnation of Assad's army. For many years, he had used a large army to defend his regime against the civil war, against rebels. Yes. And over time, this regime became more and more corrupt. And there were more and more reports of military leaders stealing equipment, not training their soldiers. So there was just the decline of the institution. Second, Assad's main supporters were Russia, Iran, and to some extent Hezbollah. And Russia is preoccupied in Ukraine. Iran is preoccupied in its conflict with Israel, as is Hezbollah. And then I think the third element of this is simply that there has been a trend all year, and this is one element of that, of large numbers of people in various societies coming out either at the voting booth or in the streets against incumbent rulers. There is anger and frustration around the world. And as a historian, we have these moments history when regimes across the world are unstable and attacked by their own people. And this is one of those moments.
These rebels who overthrew Assad have been characterized as a coalition. Who are they?
They are a mix of Islamist and Kurdish groups. The leading rebel group is known as HTS, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. And they are a mix of groups, some of which had ties to Al-Qaeda and ISIS, which are obviously things that concern the United States. They have been fighting against Assad for, in many ways, more than a decade. And many of these groups don't like each other, but they have come together for the purpose of overthrowing the regime. The question is whether they will continue to cooperate now that the regime is gone.
It's hard not to think of this in larger geopolitical terms, though, right? I mean, Syria, as you mentioned, had been serving as a kind of almost an arsenal for enemies of Israel, Hezbollah most notably. Russia, key allies, had its hands full with Ukraine. And in the U.S., of course, the president-elect has promised disengagement from what his team has described as unwinnable forever wars. Anything behind the timing of all of this?
Well, I do think with so many regimes changing around the world and so much instability, particularly in the Middle East, I do think there's a direct connection here. The most direct connection is to what's happening in Israel. I think the weakening of Hezbollah and the preoccupation now of Iran with a direct conflict now with Israel, that certainly weakened Assad's regime. And in that context, that gave the rebels an opening they had now, which they did not have even a year ago.
Yeah. But, you know, overthrowing a government is no small matter, especially one so entrenched as Assad. You need arms, you need equipment, to say nothing of intelligence, right? Coordination. Do you see the invisible hand of either the U.S. or Israel here?
I don't in this situation right now. I think Israel and the United States were as surprised, our intelligence agencies and others, as anyone else was. You could argue that over the last 15 years, it has been the United States in particular that has used its influence in the region to try to keep these rebel forces armed and able to operate. Many of them have had connections to U.S. forces in Iraq and U.S. interests in Jordan. And to some extent, perhaps the Israelis have been doing that. So, yes, I think that's a reason why the rebel forces have existed and survived as long as they have. But it does not explain, outside intervention does not explain the collapse. That's really what this is, the collapse of what we should recognize is a government that's been in power for 50 years, if we consider Assad's father, Hafez al-Assad, as well as Bashar al-Assad.
Well, who are the allies of what would be a new government in Syria? And especially you think about how many different coalitions, how many different forces make up this coalition, I should say. And I wonder what this means, as you see it, for the region writ large.
Well, it's very hard to know where this government is going. Everyone is asking that question now. That's the question that's at the center of every foreign policy maker around the world. The person who claims leadership of this coalition right now is a man named Abu Mohammed al-Jalwani. He used to be an al-Qaeda member himself, but he has now renounced al-Qaeda. He has explicitly called for pluralism. That's the word he's used in Syria. He claims he's going to try to build a coalition government. There is no history of that, at least in the last 50 years. In this region, it has been ruled by a minority, an Alawite minority of the Assad family. So it's hard to imagine this happening in a smooth way. But so far, at least the language and the claims of the new rebel forces have been positive, and they have reached out to the United States and to other countries in the region. I don't know if they've reached out to Israel. So it's hard to know. Certainly for the region, what this means now is that you have another source of instability. And the incoming Trump administration, David, might say it's not interested in the Middle East. But as often happens for new governments, they are learning very quickly the Middle East is interested in them.
Yeah. You mentioned the Syrian military earlier. Will the rebels control what's left of that military? Do the Syrian people seem to support this overthrow from what you can tell?
From what we can tell, there has been a positive reception of soldiers from the rebel groups when they've entered Aleppo, Homs, and now Damascus, the capital. But of course, the people who are favorable are the ones who come out in the street. We don't have any real polling. We don't really know. Yeah. Most Syrians are probably just waiting to see. Most of the existing Syrian government military has collapsed. Those weapons are still there in the country. But I think the institution of the Syrian military is now dissolved. And the question will be, do the former fighters in the Syrian government military, do they join the rebel forces or not? We don't know the answer to that question yet. That's one of many uncertainties.
Jeremy Suri, author and global politics expert at UT and UT's LBJ School. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, David.